After the break, we're going to interview Eric Weihenmayer, who climbed the highest mountain in the world, Mount Everest. But he's gay. He's blind. So we'll hear about that coming up.
Okay, as we head to the break.
Try to be best, because you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever...
Yo. Cap Figure Podcast. It will not go fast. It'll go slow, but time flies, you know? Cap Figure Podcast, episode 16. I'm Ryan DiPaolo.
I'm Tom McLaughlin.
And Tom McLaughlin is the first podcast host ever, but he's gay. He's gay, I'm sorry. He's skilled. So we got some shout-outs. Go, Tom.
Yeah, shout-out to Pierce Bennett from Twitter, who found our podcast, left a review.
Yes, thank you very much.
Kathleen Pierce. McLaughlin. Yeah, Pierce,
thank you very much for the love, yo. If you have a topic you want us to talk about, tweet at CapFigure.
Sounds good.
Kathy, thank you for listening.
Yes.
And my dad, if he happens to be listening, but I don't think he listens. He half listens.
So,
but thank you guys very much. And anybody else, you want to get a shout out, you know, leave a review, please, even if you don't like the show, review it. In your iTunes app that's already on there. So the World Series is about to start today. Last episode we did was like the ALCS was already sort of decided, and the NLCS had yet to be decided. So briefly we're going to review that, and then we're going to get into I don't know because it's the future. I don't know how well the talk is going to go. I was going to say very intriguing, high-level, stimulating baseball talk, but I'm not God. Only God can judge us. Like a trashy person's tattoo might say, only God can judge me. Who am I to say that? But Tom, hopefully we will deliver on this promise that I'm not really promising.
We will.
Okay. So, quickly, the NLCS, I wanted to bet, since when we last did an episode, it was, I believe, 2-1 or 1-1, and it was like, oh, now maybe is a good time. Oh, it was. It was going into Game 3, Arrieta versus Rich Hill, and I was saying, we talked at the end of last episode about, like, I was thinking about if the Dodgers win Game 3, then I could bet on the Cubs to win the series. The odds changed, like, 100 points, and I didn't do it. But, I mean, you and everybody else thought the game was going to go to 7 once Rich Hill wins Game 3, and then they have Clayton Kershaw coming back, but after being down 2-1, they just won 3 in a row. What were your thoughts on that series?
Yeah, it was interesting. I definitely thought it was going to go to Game 7 the way Kershaw was pitching. I guess the thing that sort of sticks out is, you know, Kershaw could have pitched Game 5, and then you could potentially pitch him then in Game 7 out of the bullpen, but it's just one of those things, like, it made sense for them to pitch him in Game 6.
Yeah, you're only going to get one start out of him.
And I think the Cubs really are just, they're the much better team than the Dodgers.
So the Dodgers had a really good season, though. I mean, Clayton, their playoff was a representation of their season. That, like, they're a great team with Clayton, and they're an okay team without him, right?
Yeah, I think that they had a phenomenal season when you look at who was injured, the amount of players they're paying that are on other teams' rosters. I mean, that's bad front office management.
I think they get hated on because of that. Like, everybody's view of the Dodgers being good or not in the season is affected by, like, the overwhelming thought, like, oh, they should be better, which is not really fair, like, in your rating of how they are today.
Right, and that was a lot of it that had to do with the previous regime. So the people who are in place now, you know, okay, your best players, Corey Seager drafted, Kenley Jansen, signed him as an international free agent, Kershaw is obviously developed with the Dodgers, but then even like Justin Turner, like they got him from the Mets, and you know, they're paying him less than market value, but then you have like the Carl Crawford contract. So anyway, the Dodgers, I would say they would categorize that season as a success when you look at who was out.
And they found the manager. They can be comfortable that they have a manager. Exactly. That is a good manager. So they made a good choice. So next, real quick, just the Blue Jays season is also done. Do you have any thoughts on the Blue Jays? I mean, I was not sure how I felt about them going so hard and getting too low last year and stuff, but I didn't know about the prospects they gave up.
Yeah, I think we had that discussion last year where I was kind of like bashing on the Blue Jays for making those trades, but they, it made more sense to me now, a year and a half or a year and a couple months later.
Why? Because they got to back-to-back ALCS?
Yeah, and they were really – I think they've kind of closed on their window of being a real contender because you're going to lose Bautista and Encarnacion this offseason or close to that. Tulowitzki really, to me, is not necessarily like a superstar or even an above-average shortstop at this point. So,
but giving up Jose Reyes was fine in hindsight, but you're right about Tulo.
Yeah, they have the lineup. I think that – If you take Bautista and Encarnacion out, it's a lot less intimidating, but they will still be a contender. I just think the Red Sox have like a stranglehold on that division.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, no, I agree. But even in reflection, just real quick, the Blue Jays, like, neither of us really love them going that hard for it, like adding a right-handed bat in Tulo or David Price when they did. But you could, like, say that back-to-back ALCS is as much as you could hope for to give yourself a chance to win the World Series. Like, they're getting hot away from it or not. So, I mean, you can't criticize them too much. Again, they are a team that, like, unlike the Dodgers, the way they're built, that they would consider this a disappointment. Like, especially for last year, having scored like 100 more runs than anybody. They were like the Red Sox of last year. So it would be like next year if the Red Sox don't do that well, whatever. So we'll move on to preview the World Series. Just so how we're going to do this, like let's each discuss, like, I thought it would be interesting. So Tom and I each, I looked into the Indians and you looked into the Cubs. And before we preview it, just like look at like how these teams got here. Like obviously a lot of people have an idea of how the Cubs got here, but there's still a lot of interest. It's like, how did this roster end up this good, and what is the story of this season, so to speak? So, I don't know. I'll go first, I guess, with what I thought on the Indians, right? So, looking at the lineup, there's a couple storylines. Like, also, we are going to discuss, like, their starting day on paper lineup versus what it's turned into. And that's very relevant in the Indians' case with two of their starting rotation who ended up killing it, and Danny Salazar and Carlos Carrasco out for this playoff run, which makes it amazing, right?
Yeah, two of the top 10 starting pitchers in the AL this year, both out during the playoff run.
Their best hitter coming into the season, Michael Brantley, is out.
Yep.
And he was clearly their best hitter. And their third baseman opening day is out. He got hit in the nuts, with a 106-mile-an-hour Mike Trout ball. That hit his ball.
Yeah, did you see that picture I sent you of him on the, like, the cart?
No. When, today?
No, so when Juan Uribe got hit by that ball, they had to bring a cart and take him off the field. But it's funny because at the Angel Stadium, or the Stadium at Anaheim, whatever they call it, the cart to bring people off the field is, like, it's designed like a fire truck, so it looks like a vintage fire truck with, and it says like Anaheim Fire Company and all this stuff. Anyway, when you have to be carted off, that is not.
I like how we're talking about a nut injury, a balls injury. It's like there's like a smiling presence, like we're all giggling, but like that's horrible. Like funny that that's funny though. And then like if he got a concussion, we'd be like really talking all grim and stuff. Mm-hmm. But he's really serious. He got like such a bad bruise in his. That he got designated for assignment after being out for a while. So anyway, so missing, really it's the two starters though, that's the most amazing difference from opening day. But then aside from that, just looking at like I wanted to look at this and I was curious, like, how is their roster good enough to get to a World Series? Like, how did they get here? And I guess not surprisingly, it's by drafting well, and by drafting well in the early rounds, right? Like,
Yep.
Both Kipnis, no. Both Francisco Lindor and Tyler Nyquin, their starting center fielder and shortstop, both were first round picks in the last like 5 years that they hit on in 2011 and 2012. So that right there, if you draft a shortstop or a center fielder in the first round and they hit, it's like that.
And Lindor is just amazing. He's a superstar,
exceptional,
yeah.
Right? Kipnis was a second round pick in 2009. So these are all high draft picks. This is not like, and these are like three key parts of their lineup that they hit on. Who else? Lonnie Chisenhall, who's still on the team and in the starting lineup, batted sixth, starting in right field the last three games in the playoff run, most of the playoffs. They drafted him in the first round in 2008. So it's like you don't always see this, that such high round picks are on the team. That's just an interesting little thing. But still, most of their lineup, Carlos Santana, they traded for when he was in the minors still. Mike Napoli, they got a great deal on him for $6 million for 1 year or whatever. And the year he's had, that's a great value. And trading for Coco Crisp, again, like that's another nice little piece.
Probably one of the most underrated moves.
Yeah.
Post-deadline.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been totally contributing. And that's it. Roberto Perez, they drafted. I mean, obviously, Yan Gomes is their starter. And Jose Ramirez has come in and played well, and he was an amateur free agent. But so anyway, so that's their lineup. And for the most part, it's like, who's carrying them? Kipnis, Lindor, Carlos Santana, and Tyler Nyquin. I don't know. It's just like they're middle infielders, and that's the best part of their lineup, and they're killing it. So, but my first thought when generally just looking at how the team have built also is like, oh, this kind of feels like the Cubs model, whether or not it's by design, that you have like these position players that you've drafted high, and then all their major pitchers like Andrew Miller, Corey Kluber, what's his name? Carlos Carrasco, they acquired all of them by a trade.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Only what's his name? Only Cody Allen. Did they draft Trevor Bauer? They traded Josh Tomlin. They drafted actually, but all the pitchers on this team were by trade or free agency.
Very interesting.
And so maybe by mistake they ended up doing that. You know, who knows? Because I think it's different regimes in over the time that I'm talking about, but. That's what Theo, you know, Epstein talked about. Is just like, we're going to just draft a bunch of bats and then buy pitching when we can.
Yeah, I think that is something that definitely came up on the Cubs. We'll stick with the Indians, but I think that's a great point that you brought up. The two of the front offices that really took a contrarian approach to the way drafting was, because generally, if you're an organization that's in a bigger market, you know, you want to be taking the pitching because that's like theoretically the best value. If you hit on a pitcher in the first round and you get Clayton Kershaw, you would have to pay the most for that on the free agent market. But both of these teams, it seems like they were really just focused on producing the position players, which generally can get to the big leagues quicker. And they hit on all of these guys.
Yeah, I forgot to mention Clint Frazier. They drafted in the first round and turned him into Andrew Miller. And he's another, a first-round pick that you're hitting on, these high picks. That's so, like, I don't know, useful. I also was thinking, though, that it's like the upside to hitting on them is way more than the downside of missing in baseball, because you have so many rounds of picks that it's not like the NFL where if you draft a quarterback in the first round, like theoretically, if obviously there's no more Lindors in their system, but if they missed on their first round pick, whatever. In baseball, it's not a sport that's not as damaging, but either way, it's really like I just was surprised that that their whole lineup pretty much was like homegrown essentially, and then all their pitchers were traded for. So that's really it. I mean,
So one of the questions that I think was going to come up for me was, what do you think if we went back and say Jonathan Lucroy did accept the deal at the deadline? You remember he used his no trade clause.
What
sort of impact do you think that would have? Or do you think that they would just be even a little bit better team than they are right now?
Well, I don't even remember what they would have had to give up. I mean, it was
prospects. So
because they're not a big market team, like because they're like a medium, they're medium, like average, right? But because they're not giant, I don't think they would regret it, because as we talked about at the time, they had a pretty big divisional lead. And, like, I guess it's like if you know you're in the tournament and you know, even though they had by far the worst production out of that spot, I don't think you do that. I don't think you can go for it. Like, they can only go for it so much, right? Say they had to choose between Andrew Miller and going for Luke Roy, which maybe they didn't. But, like, if I were the owner or GM, I would, like, be like, all right, look, we can only let you go for so many, like, trade so many prospects to get good now. I think it's pretty clear that I would take Andrew Miller, right? Because Roberto Perez has played well enough.
Yep.
But I don't know if you can give them credit for that. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
I think they would be in the same spot. I've been surprised with how Roberto Perez is playing. I think Luke Roy, we could be saying the same thing if the Rangers were in the World Series. It's like the acquisition of the year. But I just think it's very interesting how the Indians transitioned from the regular season being a team that's totally reliant on starting pitching, how they get into the playoffs, their starting pitching is totally decimated, but they're still able to, you know, kind of make the bullpen work for them. Francona has just been a total master of working
awesome.
The bullpen.
The other thing I love is that he had the balls to, no pun intended, Uribe, sorry, but that another Francona listening to sabermetricians that I love is that he's hit Carlos Santana leadoff this year, who's not that fast, but he walks 90 times a year, you know, like 80. He gets on base a ton. And, like, you know, that's not, like, the natural thought. Like, I'm sure people were like, oh, why don't you start your center fielder leadoff or Lindor or somebody. So,
sweet.
That's it. How about the Cubs? What are your thoughts? Or how is this team built? I mean, they're all drafted, no?
Yeah, so I think, you know, before diving into the actual players themselves, you know, we'll touch on Theo Epstein was hired in October 2011. He obviously was the GM who broke the curse with the Red Sox. When he was hired, he brought with him Jed Hoyer, who was his number two in Boston, who's technically the general manager. And from the beginning, you know, it wasn't necessarily as evident from their records at that point, but they went into just a straight rebuild where they had traded out all of their veteran players. Jeff Samardzija was shipped out, and they totally rebuilt. And yeah, you're absolutely right. This team, they just built through the draft. The fact that they hit on all of these guys is totally amazing to me.
Yeah.
There is some luck in that. You know, Chris Bryant, they drafted number two overall in 2013. One move which I think people kind of forget about is Anthony Rizzo. They traded to get him from the Padres.
Yeah, I forget. I always think of him as homegrown, even though I know he was on the Padres and the Red Sox.
Yeah, and so that's what I was going to say, is actually Epstein drafted him on the Red Sox. And
I never thought about that. That's funny.
So, you know, it's one of those moves that...
It's like Rex Ryan bringing these horrible players with him to Buffalo.
IK, the guy who punched Geno Smith. IK and Tim Pooley.
Poor Geno. He's at his ACL.
Yeah. So then, you know, Javier Baez was the ninth overall pick in 2011.
How about Addison Russell?
They got him in a trade from Oakland in July of 2014.
Oh, for the Samardzija.
Exactly.
That's right. I forgot about that. Wow, man. What a price. I mean,
so
people
think
knew
about it
at the time, but...
Think about the Oakland Athletics to have Josh Donaldson and Addison Russell.
And Yoenis.
Yep.
I mean, like, all of them have done way better than they were at the time. But Yoenis was also on that team. Like,
yep.
Two MVP candidates and one, like, really good young shortstop.
And then, you know, to round out this team, obviously, you know, you have Wilson Contreras, who comes in as a catcher, and he has been an absolute superstar. He's 24 years old.
Was he even in their opening? He wasn't in their opening day lineup, right?
No.
Who was supposed to be catcher this season for them?
Well, it was supposed to be Schwarber. But then you have
Miguel Montero, David Ross.
But yeah, I mean, this team, and it's also interesting that none of their starting pitchers are from the organization or drafted, same way as
right.
we're talking with the Indians.
And this is what they said was the plan, to buy Lester and just to purchase pitching or get it other ways.
Yeah, you know, the trade for Arrieta from Baltimore in 13, trade for Kyle Hendricks from the Rangers in 2012. So they, you know, I think it's just a very smart approach. Epstein always sort of bets on these guys who are a little bit undervalued or just can't pull it all together. And then, you know, you just get him a change of scenery. I'm sure every GM tries to do that, but...
And they paid for John Lester, obviously, just for those who don't know, they gave him, like, the second biggest pitching contract ever 2 years ago. And some people were like, oh, is this a year early for the Cubs? Is this a little early to buy the free agent pitching before the rest of the yep. team is there? But clearly it's not been, because even though last year it was like, oh, wow, he's not even their ace and they're paying him, Arrieta outpitched him. In the long run, now Lester's coming back and done well.
Salaries just keep going up. So at the time, it raised an eyebrow for me too. But Lester has proved more than capable.
You know what else is? You bring up the point that I'm thinking of the obvious reasons, like why you would like decide to like just draft a bunch of bats and then figure you will get pitching other ways, which is backwards of most organizations. Like, let's just stack up on arms, and because some of them are going to fail. Is that like on the top end? Like, Bryce Harper is getting way more than CC Sabathia or John Lester, right? It's like the top pitcher on the top end gets way less than an everyday player, as they should. But I wonder also, I hadn't thought of this, that they come up way faster.
Yeah.
Like, pitchers aren't able to come up that quickly. Like, Chris Bryant, already MVP, maybe.
Yeah, Kyle Schwarber, I think we forgot to mention
Ridiculous.
Him. He was the number 4 overall pick. I believe it was in 2014. Yeah, 2014, the number 4 overall pick. He came up last year as he had just turned 22.
Yeah.
And he was in the majors. I think the Cubs, there was a great Wall Street Journal article where they were talking about Theo likes to draft players who have one great skill. And then, obviously, you know, they talk about character and, you know, like the player's attitude, which every single organization pays attention to. But I just found that very interesting, that they like to hone in on players who have one, like, totally exceptional skill.
That's kind of what we were talking about yesterday, like on a team prediction level, that a lot of like analysts will say like, oh, this team needs an identity. And that's just rhetoric, but it does make you easier to envision success for on a team level. And it's yeah. the same on an individual level. It's like, I know that this guy, Trey Turner, can run, right? I know he can do that and then probably play good defense. Or, like, I know that Kyle Schwarber has a great hit tool, right?
Yep.
Even though the fielding will come, but it's like, I can hang my hat on that. It is. That does make sense. I mean, I don't know what... Maybe the other counter argument is like going for all, and Kyle Schwarber doesn't have a position. But what about like their outfield? Jason Hayward, they likely missed on, right? It's like they likely overpaid.
Yeah, they likely did overpay, and I think, you know, I kind of left him out of the discussion until now because he's one of the things I want to talk about with the Cubs going forward. You know, I mentioned to you yesterday, I believe, that Schwarber was actually rehabbing after being out. He tore his ACL earlier this year. I think it may have been in spring training, but so...
Schwarber, it was like game 3 in Arizona, I remember. He collided with, what's his name, in the outfield. He collided with Dexter Fowler, I think.
Yeah, you're right. And he... He played in an Arizona Fall League game yesterday. So
yesterday, today is game 1 of the World Series. Just for in the future, when you're listening by a robot, is like you're like Cap Figure Podcast, that great podcast that got famous back in 2016.
Them guys.
So yeah.
But yeah, so I think Hayward, you know, they paid him this long contract. He's still only 27 now, but I think you need to leave him off the World Series roster right now. And put
really?
Schwarber in instead. Yeah,
he's
because
playing that bad.
He's hitting below 50. Is below 50, I think, is his batting
oh
average
my God.
Right now. And
ew, I'm gonna look it up.
The
Go
thing
ahead.
Is, you know, you could make the argument to keep him in just because of his defense.
But it's right field. It's like, what good, like, that's not that exciting. Yeah, he's hitting 0-7-1.
And it did, you know, if it was him by himself, but it doesn't matter now because they have Alberto Almora, who came up, who's a phenomenal defensive outfielder. So the actual benefit that you're going to get from having Hayward as a defensive player, it's so marginal with Almora there. You know, and the other thing about Hayward is, you know, everyone just says, like, oh, he's an absolutely elite defender. And he is. He gets to a ton of balls that, like, most other right fielders in the league can't get to. But his arm is terrible. It's not good. And that's, like, you can't just ignore that.
Yeah, like, how, right. And, well, and this was the problem with Hayward last year, is, like, how worth is it to pay a really good defensive right fielder? He ended up hitting a lot more to end the season and then giving you hope again. But so anyway, and then also their outfield, if Baez is playing second, obviously it's Fowler and then Zobrist. And Zobrist was a great signing. Everybody wanted him. I mean, the Mets did. And that gives you options.
Yeah. You know, you have Bryant, you're going to probably leave him at third, but if in the event you do need someone to go play left or right field, all of these players are like totally interchangeable.
Yeah.
Which is just unbelievable.
So let's look forward then. I mean, do you have another like observation about their roster construction, or should we start comparing?
I mean, there's not really much I can add to what I think people know. Is it's just when you look at the amount of years left for some of these players, it's just crazy. They're going to be great for a long time.
Nah, don't. You just jinxed them, man. Last year, my Mets were in the playoffs, and everybody calling the fan was worried about next season and the future. Mike Francesa, you're going to have these arms for years. This is great, blah, blah, blah. Then all of them get hurt. Just live in the moment, Cubs fans. Just live in the moment. They're all going to die. Chris Bryant's dick is going to explode. Anthony Rizzo's going to start doing steroids because he's Italian and he can't help it. And then he's going to, like, just lose everything. Guys, just enjoy it now. So you tried to send me this before we go into, like, each team's, like, little postseason history, which may be fun. Maybe you sent me a thing I wasn't able to open, but about comparing position by position. Let's just go by the lineup. Is there anywhere besides shortstop and second that you like the Indians better? There's not, right? I mean, I don't think that if I'm looking at the lineup, maybe I like Kluber over your ace, right? So ace versus ace, I like. But everything else, I like Miller over Chapman. And even if you want to call Miller the best bullpen pitcher,
so I think what positions did you mention?
I mentioned shortstop and second are the only spots I would have them better.
Right, and second base is a little bit closer than.
Well,
Baez
is killing it, and yeah,
right.
This is fans voting on who's better.
Yeah, I think that.
So fans are stupid. Let's keep in mind. But go on.
I think DH, you know, I would rather have Santana than Soler, who's the projected DH, but that only comes into play for four of the games. But yeah, no, anywhere else, I think I would take the Indians bullpen, but in the position players, no.
Wait, what did the poll have? They only had the Indians winning
short, second, and the DH position.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, obviously, every other position
and
is
right
better.
Field is a toss-up between Lonnie Chisenhall and Jason Hayward.
That's pretty pathetic for Lonnie Chisenhall, dude. Get it together. The fans think Jason Hayward might be better than you. You're pretty screwed.
I was going to say it's obviously pathetic the other way because one is making $23 million a year more than the other.
So what was I going to say? You know, what's interesting is we did this exercise for all the playoff teams before it started, and we were correct on the bad end. Like, this, it doesn't directly work out with both teams because they're not playing against each other in this way. Like, you know, greatness in one spot can make up for deficiency else, whatever. But like, the two teams with the most worst, like we picked that the Mets and the Orioles each had, out of the five playoff teams in each league, the most worst players, and yep, both of them lost the wild card game and were out of the playoffs first. So do you think the Cubs can, like, defeat the curse of the Billy Goat? And by the way, for those of you who don't know, because my dad and Tom both asked me if I knew this, as if people didn't, But the curse of the Billy Goat, which is what people think the Cubs haven't won in over 100 years, is that a guy tried to bring his goat to a game at Wrigley, and they said, whoa, 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 I don't care your goat has a ticket, buddy. Your goat can't enter. And he said, hala baka jaka ala amad baka, and put a curse on the Cubs.
I think that the goat apparently smelled bad, too, and so other patrons were complaining about that.
Other patrons' goats were uncomfortable around his goat. You know, it's fun. I told you earlier, but when I first heard this, like, story, I, like, because the 1800s is so long ago to me, I, like, assumed it was normal to bring your goat to games and was like, wow, Wrigley Field was really in the wrong in that situation. They deserved that curse. But that's not a normal thing. The dude was, like, a PETA member who, like, probably thought it was his wife. That's crazy. You can't let a curse like that ruin your franchise, Cubs.
That's whack.
Wait, so do you have the playoff history, like the recent look up? Okay. And so, like, tell me their blow. Didn't they have a really good year with Carlos Zambrano and stuff, and they got swept in the NLDS? In, like, 07-08, it was the 100-year anniversary of their winless, and I think they won 100 games. And they lost. Check like 07 or 08 if you see the list of their seasons.
Well, the obvious main one to think about too is 2003.
Yeah, I watched that whole game before I even liked baseball. They were up 3-2 at home for the last two, right?
Yeah.
And the Marlins with Josh Beckett and whatnot, who ended up beating the Yankees, did the Bartman and make everybody in the country realize that Chicago people have no souls if they would make that poor guy feel bad. There was a play where Josh Reddick was running to the foul territory and he could have maybe caught a ball at Wrigley. Like it ended up being a ground rule double in the first inning against Kershaw, but it was really funny. Like the fans are very aware to not Bartman. Like Rizzo was running for a ball by first base and the guys got out of his way, and then the ground rule double, they went and reached for it. I mean, I think the fear of being lynched would make you become a smart fan.
Yeah, I wouldn't come anywhere near that ball.
Do you see the series I'm referencing?
No.
Well, you talk, and I'll search it, because you clearly don't know how to use the internet.
In 2007, they played in the NLDS.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Against the Arizona Diamondbacks.
And they lost.
They did lose.
Yeah, yeah. That year, how many games did they win?
I don't know.
I'll look it up. Yeah, you gotta learn how to improvise.
Yeah, look at why don't you look at the year that the pitcher they had for a while. Why don't you look at the year they had a bunch of wins and made the playoffs?
Yeah. Sorry, it's like, yeah. What was that guy who wore his hat sideways?
Yeah, you don't know how to use the internet.
What was that guy who wore his hat sideways a little bit and like pitched here and there? Dontrell Willis?
Yeah. So
all right, tell me, I don't know, what were your thoughts when looking at their disappointments or whatever?
I don't know. To me, it's a little bit of that like self-fulfilling prophecy where I think sometimes the fans of these teams, they just kind of like buy into this stuff and like have just a negative attitude. I mean, the Cubs have had some pretty good players over the year. They've had some pretty good teams. But I don't really believe in the curse. The only thing that, other than the goat story, which I think is just a little bit weird, but the curse of the black cat, I think that may, if anything, would be what I would believe in, which is...
If you had to pick a curse. If you had to pick a spiritual curse,
If I had to pick the Cubs' curse, it would be that. And that happened when
the Cubs
blew about an 8-game lead to the Mets, and the black cat came to the on-deck circle. Cubs ended up blowing the series, and...
As my home phone rings in my dad's apartment that I forgot I had, because...
And life as we know it is never the same.
Only the... I'll do it. No, talk. Sorry, that was a little break because my dad apparently has a home phone. What is this, 1980? Hey. No, but only the fake IRS calls that phone. I literally forgot to turn it off before we recorded because only messages on that are like, this is the IRS. You owe us a lot of money or you're going to be arrested.
You are a prince and have received a settlement.
Yeah, this is Mr. Witherspoon, you have received a large sum of money. I just need some money to give you the money. It's like, no problem. Got you.
So.
So it was 08, by the way, just real quick. Just like, and Zambrano had a great season, and they got swept by the Dodgers with Lou Piniella as their manager. Remember, he was the savior before Theo Epstein. And that was like the 100-year anniversary of them not winning a World Series,
Sweet
I don't
Lou.
Think. So then they won 97 games. But so what were you about to say about their
No, so this Justin from my sources, Danny Salazar, will be added to the roster for the World Series. So that's just another weapon out of the bullpen for the Indians.
Oh, yeah, really? Yeah, I noticed. I didn't realize he wasn't on the DL. So wait. Okay, so the cat was on the on-deck circle. So you think that's real? That matters? That plays into the odds?
I really don't think it should, but I think
you're an idiot. It kind of does. Yeah, you're retarded. Absolutely these spiritual things do, or else, you know, what do you just believe you nothing happens when you die? You don't believe in God, Tom?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Joe Maddon, it really is miraculous when you hear some of these players talk about this and they've really just sort of embraced it as a challenge, which is the best way to go.
Well, it's easy to embrace it as a challenge when you're like one of the best teams in years and you could be like, yeah, we're gonna overcome that. But it is, I don't know, in all seriousness, I don't really believe in it, but anyway, I don't even need to say that. Like, I hope you guys know that. But, you know, they had a great playoff run last year and this year. They're all good. So the Indians, they actually lost the last time they were in the playoffs. They lost in the wild card game to the Rays and Joe Maddon.
Yep.
And then before that, they lost to the Red Sox and Terry Francona, the Indians. And that series I remember because there was a really clear play. I printed out the Wikipedia because I remember this so well. Kenny Lofton. It was game 7 of the series, and in the 7th inning with one out, and Kenny Lofton at second base, and the game was, like, tied at this point. The final ended up being, like, 11-1, but who knows what would have happened, 11-2, but you don't know what happened, because they ended up scoring all their runs in the last two innings. And then in the 7th inning with one out and Kenny Lofton at second base, Franklin Gutierrez singled over the third base bag into foul territory, with the ball ricocheting back into left field off the infamous angular foul territory fence of Fenway Park. Shortstop Julio Lugo and outfielder Manny Ramirez went after the ball. As he was about to turn toward home plate, third base coach Joel Skinner held Lofton at third. The Indians' at-bat ended when Casey Blake hit into a 5-4-3 double play. But I just remember my dad went on a business trip to Cleveland right after that game, and he said everybody was talking about, like, how does Daddy Reed hold him up at third? That was all the sports radio, and that was, like, all devastating for Cleveland. And then before that, they lost two World Series in the 90s.
Yeah, the 97 team, too, you know, I think people still have a chip on their shoulder about that because those teams were really, really good.
I mean,
you have like young Ramirez, Manny Ramirez, Kenny Lofton. They had Albert Bell in his prime, and then Omar Vizquel.
I'm nodding my head, but I didn't follow baseball until
Roberto
recently.
Alomar.
You might as well be talking Chinese to me. Babe Ruth or no?
Carlos Baerga.
Was Babe Ruth before then? Mickey Mantle. So go on, sorry.
Yeah, so they just had the most talented core of young players at the time, and they lost in Game 7 to the Marlins, obviously.
Well, that's what goes down, and that's why who the hell knows? It's baseball, you know? That's why all you can do is put yourself in a position to get in the tournament, especially since they've added playoff rounds as baseball's gone over the years. It's going to be a little bit more random who's going to win with these small sample size series, and that's how the Indians are here right now because they've – it's like such short series that if you push your bullpen and they have great pitcher like Andrew Miller, that could be the difference in a series.
Yep.
Oh, that's the other thing we need to talk about before we end. We got like 10-5 minutes, whatever, but you made a really good point, and we talked about this a little bit off air, but I always, in the regular season the last couple years, always forget about, like, every time there's a bullpen acquisition made, I'm like, this is so overrated. This is so ridiculous. Like, any starter, if you took any of the top starters and put them in the bullpen, they would be as good as Aroldis Chapman in a second. And I still believe that. I believe that the average closer is not nearly as good as, like, the best closer is not as good as, like, the third best starter in most rotations.
Yep.
I think they're way, way better and way more influential on games. But if you compare the amount of innings that, like, Andrew Miller pitched in the regular season compared to team innings, we did the math. like in the playoffs, if you're using them how Terry Francona has used them, and obviously Andrew Miller is an outlier, it is having such more an impact on games. Go ahead before I say the numbers.
Yeah, so that, I mean, if you have the numbers in front of you, go ahead. But I do. Yeah, we determined that, you know, when you bring in Miller and he's pitching two or three of the highest leverage innings, his value comes to more than, you know, second starter.
Yeah, of all their innings of 162 games in the regular season, Andrew Miller pitched 78.1 innings this year. That equates to 5% of the random out he was involved in the random game this year.
So he got 5% of all of their outs.
Right, correct.
Got it.
Yeah. And in the playoffs, to this point, he's gotten 16.5% of all of their outs. And that's, I mean, obviously you can't, you know, plan for that difference unless you have a manager who's going to push them, and not, it doesn't work with all closers. This is an extreme example where he matters very much, and still, like, Corey Kluber's impact is still much greater. But the fact that you can pick their innings when they want, right? It's like, it's not simply you get 16% of all outs from him. It's you get to distribute them theoretically when you want. But, and again, though, this is only with Andrew Miller, who not only can be pushed to go these extra innings, but also is willing to come in at any point in the game. Not all closers are or as flexible or as stamina-eyed, whatever the word is.
Yeah, durable.
So,
So the 16%, like you said, you get to choose when you use them. And for Miller's case, they're in the highest leverage situation. So, you know, if you just think about that number, 15-16% of the outs, that's almost exactly what you would expect from, you know, a front end of the line starter. And so, you know, it just speaks to the bigger picture in baseball. You know, we saw the trade deadline. There were a couple of very good relievers available. It was a unique situation where they all happened to be on the Yankees. But, you know, the prices that were being paid, people were saying it was absolutely crazy. And I tended to agree that they were paying too much for these players.
Very happy you were, as a Yankee fan, to get what you did for both of them.
Absolutely.
But now they're both the closers in the World Series.
And that's fine. But it makes me feel better about the Yankees organization as a whole, too. Because if you think about it, if the Yankees had made the playoffs and they had those three pieces together for a short series, I mean, the Yankees could be capable of doing the same thing.
Yeah, that would restore my faith in the logic of Brian Cashman a little bit. I didn't realize till this moment that I didn't think about that it's Aroldis and Andrew Miller in the series. Had you thought about it, that's the two Yankees?
I did.
I didn't realize that's the two major pieces we're referencing.
And it's just very interesting because they're obviously total opposite ends of the spectrum. Chapman's very flashy, will only come in the ninth inning, has a fastball. But Miller is just the true professional with two pitches, comes in whenever.
Andrew Miller is going to be the future, like we've talked about. Like, I always used to think, like, if you before the season, and I've said this on the radio show before, but it's like if you get to know, like, okay, I got Noah Syndergaard for 20% of all my outs, I'm going to pick whenever I get to use them, that one day and maybe three-inning pitchers per game or something like that. Or it could be, you know, more than that, right? Yep. And then you get to distribute your best pitcher stuff whenever you want and save them when you're losing. And, like, I don't know. It's just – it's really cool. But Joe Maddon is just as good. I don't mean to, like, be dick-riding Terry Francona. Tito, sorry. I'm maybe an insider enough to call him Tito now. He texted me and said, "Rye, call me Tito."
Tito.
But you think that
you have to give more respect to Francona just because of the circumstances. You know, the Cubs had a full, healthy rotation coming in too.
Oh yeah.
So the situations just haven't had to present themselves.
Well, also
where,
it's
like,
the AL. I mean, and he hasn't had to make pinch hitting choices.
Yeah, that's very fair. I just think that one game against the Blue Jays where,
bro,
you
I've
know,
given him a ton of credit.
Bauer
no, yeah.
came out after a third of an inning. That was just miraculous.
Hell yeah.
Francona was able to piece that together.
No, I love him. He's absolutely done great. So let's make a preview. Before last week, you said you think the Indians are going to win, that you see another Bartman. But you have been known to flip-flop on your series predictions. You know, you got a big reputation for that after your classic Nationals-Dodgers flop.
Yeah. WFAN is listening closely.
So what are you gonna who's your prediction, Tom?
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with my pick and I pick the Indians. I think they're gonna win in seven games. I think that the Cubs are obviously the better team, you know, top to bottom with talent. I think if you ran a million simulations, the Cubs would win, say, 65% of those series or maybe even 60%. But the Indians are just such a team that they play such complementary baseball to each other. I think that they're peaking at exactly the right time. And the thing is, you know, even though I would only take their bullpen as a strength compared to, you know, the Cubs,
right,
I think that the Indians are not so far behind at a lot of different positions.
Yeah, that's
and
a good
I
point.
Think their bullpen is just so good that, you know, there is something psychological when you know that if you're not winning the game in the fifth inning, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get Miller, too. You're going to get Allen, one. And
their ace
Shaw.
Is better. I like Kluber. Kluber had a better year than John Lester.
Yeah.
Like, and their ace is better, right? So, I mean, there is a case to be made for the Indians, absolutely. The other case is that the freaking All-Star game determines home field advantage.
Yeah, that is
like
just,
it's so stupid. My dad was like pointing out, I forgot that like a bunch of guys like Cano who want to try to show off and like hit a home run, and like Verlander who just tries to throw 100 as fast as he can and doesn't care how many hits he gives up. That game determines that the best team in years doesn't have home field in the World Series.
Yeah,
it's
that's
so silly.
It's unbelievable.
It's so stupid.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, the home field advantage may not be the same in baseball as, say, like an NFL game, but it's a huge advantage.
Yeah. It still absolutely
impacts
matters
everything.
Very much. Yeah, man.
And especially when both leagues have the different sets of rules.
Right,
where,
right.
Like, you have
it's
a
the,
DH
exactly,
or not
yeah,
a DH.
That's what I was going to say. It's the World Series, therefore there's different rules in each league.
So the Cubs have constructed this team to play almost the entirety of the season under one way, right? And now, you know, they do everything right, like we said, and now they have to play four games the other
right,
way.
Right, 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 right.
Which is, they'll be fine, and they may actually even benefit from, because the bat that they're going to bring on is probably better than, you know, who the Indians could. But it's still, it's ridiculous to me that the All-Star game determines that.
Yeah, I mean, well, no, like, in the AL, I know what you mean, but you're wrong. Like the DH, when they're in Indians, the obviously the Indians have the better roster for AL Park, but it's way worse the other way when the pitchers have to hit Indians have to lose out on either Mike Napoli or Carlos Santana.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like the disadvantage on the road for the Indians is way bigger than their advantage at home, but they still
right.
do have a DH advantage.
You're right.
Yeah, I think the Cubs are going to win in four games. I think I'm trying to have a lot of hot takes. I'm trying to change my game up. My therapist said to have some hot takes.
So you're just going to pick chalk, but chalk by
no, they're going to sweep.
Lot.
That's not chalk. Okay. That's less chalk than you saying that a 2-1 series with the Cubs and Dodgers is looking like a 7-game series.
Okay.
When all they need to do is each win one game.
Okay. I can't wait for the Cubs to sweep the Mets next year.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, that'll get you a revenge for me making fun of your flip-flopping?
It will.
Lastly, Pete Rose, I got your message. I'm going to get back to you. Stop. You don't need to keep emailing me.
Pete Rose is just the greatest comedian on post-game shows I've ever seen. He just, everything about him is just so ridiculous. Like, he's just Hawk Harrelson, but a little bit crazier.
And a little bit, like, I think he knows what he's doing a little bit more. Like, Hawk actually seems like he's lost.
Well, you remember that joke I told you about where Pete Rose said, you know, about A-Rod won't let me on the G5 or whatever. He made the same joke again.
Really?
Yeah, another night. He's like, hey, let me jump on that private jet. Alex here won't let me on the G5.
So that,
the same joke.
That shows you one of two things. One, that he's forgetting what he says. Or two, that he's actually resentful, like we suspected, at sitting next to a billionaire while he's gambled away all his money. Like, it's pretty funny. It's a weird spot to be in, to be coworkers with somebody who has 800 times amount more money than you and doesn't need the paycheck, and you do.
Yeah.
So he might really, really want to get on the G5.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, I don't know. A-Rod's probably not going to make the Hall of Fame. I was going to say that. Frank Thomas is the only one in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah,
those
yeah.
Three.
Well, A-Rod might be forgiven. That last season, A-Rod is so lucky that he had that last little rebound of home runs, like, clean, that he could save his image a little, but...
Yeah.
All right, so that's it. We're done. All right, you heard it here first. Tom's not flip flopping. Cat Figure Podcast, please leave a review. It's in your phone already. Anything else?
That's all, folks.
That's all. Thank you. Bye.
Peace. Never doubt that you're the one.